Hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and I have the honor to have Blanca Zarazua Esquire here to co-host with me today. Blanca is a Monterey County immigration attorney and has maintained her own practice since 1987. One very interesting thing to know about Blanca Zarazua is that she has been honored with a lifetime appointment by Mexico's former president, Vicente Fox, to serve as honorary consul of Mexico for Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. And learn more about Blanca at Zara Law, that's ZARALaw.com. Welcome, Blanca, to Be Bold America, and thank you for coming in to the studio to co-host with me.
Well, I'm so thrilled to be here, Jill. Thank you for the invitation. I'm very much looking forward to it. I want to congratulate everyone who's listening for having made the choice to listen. There are so many things to listen to, and our sensory skills sometimes are not quite up to snuff. But please stay tuned and listen carefully. We have a lot of information that will be useful to you. And quería nomás darle la bienvenida a nuestra gente que está escuchando. Estoy aquí a sus órdenes en español. Muchas gracias.
And you just modeled that you're going to relate in Spanish some of the key points during this hour. So thank you, Blanca. And the topic we'll be discussing today is, when policing the border, cruelty is the point. It is time for the United States Border Patrol to experience an unflinching analysis of its actions because it is riddled with corruption, racism, and misogyny. There is an ugly underbelly, and today our bold interview guest, Jen Budd, is the most important voice exposing what most of us never see about immigration enforcement in the United States. Jen is raw and truthful, and no one escapes judgment, not even herself. Her book, Against the Wall, My Journey from Border Patrol Agent to Immigrant Rights Activist, challenges us as individuals and as a nation to face the consequences of our actions. We have big things to do. Blanca, would you like to introduce our guest?
It would be my honor. Jen, how are you? Pleasure to meet you via radio. Jen Budd was a senior partner, patrol agent with the U.S. Border Patrol in San Diego, a senior intelligence agent at San Diego Sector Headquarters, and an acting supervisory Border Patrol agent from 1995 to 2001 when she resigned in protest due to the rampant corruption and brutality she witnessed on a daily basis. After nearly 30 years of border experience on both sides of the issues, she came to the realization that our immigration policies have created an intentionally brutal system that, in her opinion, resembles a slow-moving genocide for asylum seekers. She is often quoted and consulted on Border Patrol articles for outlets such as The New York Times, Newsweek, The Nation, The Guardian, Washington Post, Daily Cause, NPR, Telemundo, CNN, Politico, Mandar Jones, John Oliver, Samantha Bee, and very recently she was featured in The Nation magazine December 25th, 2023 to January 1st, 2024 issue. You may also find Jen in the halls of Congress speaking with members on humane immigration policies. Welcome to Be Bold America, Jen.
Well, thank you so much, Blanca and Jill. I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much for the invite.
Well, we're excited to have you here. It's really an honor. And Jen, you have written a brilliant book. I can't imagine how difficult it must have been to write, discussing your mother and the scene of being raped by a fellow Border Patrol classmate just made my stomach knot up. I hope writing this book was healing for you at some level. Where would you like to begin this interview?
Well, you know, the book was very healing for me, and actually that's the original reason why I started to write it, was it was a method of exploring what I did in the Border Patrol, what I experienced in the Border Patrol, you know, and it took me about 5 years, because I think when I first started it, it was all very on the surface, you know, and I didn't get really deep into it till probably about the fourth and fifth year, so. Yeah. it was a good experience.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad it was a bit healing for you. And do you want to start with your childhood a little bit?
Well, yeah, essentially, I mean, I don't want to take up too much of the time. I just, on myself, as opposed to exposing the system and what it is, but basically, I grew up in Alabama, and my family was rife with brutality and abuse. My mother was a serious alcoholic, and she physically abused me quite a bit, and I didn't know any different. And when I went to college, I was putting myself through college at Auburn University, graduated at the top of my class, was on my way to law school. I wanted to be a civil rights attorney. And somebody said this thing called the Border Patrol was hiring, and I was like, well, what is that? I'd never heard of it, being from Alabama. And, you know, they just said it was kind of like the FBI, but on the border, and they offered me a job in San Diego. And as a young woman who knew that I was gay and living in the South back in the 90s, I thought that sounded like an interesting adventure to take before I joined, you know, some law school. And so I joined, not knowing what the U.S. Border Patrol was. And essentially, I was sexually assaulted in the academy. That's very common in the academy. Many of the female agents are.
Wow.
It's quite common. And it's so common that the Border Patrol men, the motto of the Border Patrol is honor first. But the men don't say it that way. They say it on her first.
Oh, my.
And, the Border Patrol only has, like, 5% women. They've only been able to have 5% women the whole time. And they say, well, it's because the job is so hard and so tough. And it's not that it's not hard and tough, but it's that they sexually assault us. And the men will tell you that that's what we have to overcome. That's our hazing, to be part of the Green family. At any rate, I kind of feel like that incident made me kind of put my head down. You know, I knew how to get through abuse, and I knew how to exist in the same space as somebody who was abusing me. Fortunately, he was sent to another station than I was when we got to California. And I kind of, through my writing, realized, because I was like, how is it that somebody with my morals and the way, even though I was abused when I was brought up, I was raised differently than that. And I couldn't understand how I could join an agency like that and not see, you know, what I was doing. And the fact of the matter is I myself am traumatized and just trying to get away from my family. I'm trying to prove that I'm a good agent. I'm trying to prove that I can, you know, make it myself. And I put my head down, and I would excuse some of the violence that I dished out or the brutality and the laws that I enforced simply by saying what they told us to say. Well, it's the law. There are legal ways to do it, and you just choose not to do it. But over time, being on the mountains, with, you know, in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere with migrants and sitting around waiting for transportation and talking to them and learning about who they were. It was totally different than what I was taught in the academy. They were not all criminals. Very few of them were criminals, less than 1%. In fact, I knew the agents around me were committing more crimes than the migrants I was arresting every day. And so I just I started to understand that I had joined something that was not good, and I watched my fellow colleagues, many of them who joined for the same reason I did. You know, they needed a job, they needed money, they needed to raise a family, wanted to get started in their careers. They believed they were protecting the United States of America. And then you get out to the field and you understand that honor first is a lie, that the majority of people coming across are not criminals, and that the Border Patrol just portrays them as criminals,
right,
to everybody.
So, Blanca, Blanca has a question for you.
Very briefly, just I'm going to interject. Bear with me, please. Tenemos una señora que tardó 5 años en escribir un libro sobre lo que realmente pasa adentro de la fuerza fronteriza. Ella fue agente en San Diego y es muy interesante lo que está diciendo. At what point did you start questioning your country and democracy in America as you had come to understand it before you were traumatized by all of this information of what was happening within the agency? Because I would suspect that you came in very optimistic and hoping to contribute to America, and then all of a sudden you see what the real deal is. And what were your thoughts? How did your view on America and democracy change along the way?
I was very fortunate in that I joined the Border Patrol in June of 1995. So that means that our deterrence policies, where we intentionally pushed the migrants out to the mountains where I worked, in the deserts, in the Rio Grande Rivers, the most dangerous places to cross, that's what deterrence policies do. And they had told us in the academy that that would make them not cross. Nobody would dare cross out where we worked. And when I got to Campo, which is the very eastern part of San Diego County, it's called High Desert Area. So it's dry, but there is some brush and trees. It's before you get down to the really sandy desert. And so it's very hot, and migrants would die in the summertime from heat stroke and so forth. And then in the wintertime, they freeze to death because we're in the mountains and it snows. And when I first started to question that was when the Clinton wall had gotten to the western portion of our area of patrol, which was Tecate Port of Entry. And it did not stop any migrants. More migrants just kept coming. And what it did was it took migrants who were not fit enough, especially women and young children, it took those migrants who would normally cross down in the cities and push them to the mountains. And so I spent many years, and my colleagues spent many years, recovering the bodies of not what the Border Patrol would like you to think are just male drug dealers. No, we're talking women and children. And that's what destroyed a lot of my friendships and my friends with other agents. They turned to drinking, they turned to sex addiction to deal with it, they turned to corruption to deal with it, they bring this stuff home. I personally turned more towards trying to get out of there. And then eventually it ends up catching up with me, and I overeat, I'm overweight now, and then I end up in a suicide attempt. It's one of the reasons why the agents have more suicides than anybody else. And I watched my colleagues suffering from it, and I was suffering from it as well. So it's being a, for me, I was in a unique position to see the border without a wall and what that meant, and the border after the wall and what that meant. And I could not deny that deterrence policies and the wall was intentionally sending migrants to their deaths. And I was enforcing laws that did that, and I was ashamed of that.
Well, that sounds like a living hell. Blanca?
Well, just going inside a migrant's mind, and I'm not one to presume to understand completely what happens, but I suspect that many folks are thinking, well, if I stay home, I'm probably going to get killed anyway. I may as well maybe get killed in the process of trying to get to the U.S. And so death is always sort of part of the formula, and saying, well, but maybe I get lucky, I don't die, and I get in there and I start working to make a better life for my family, I would think.
Yeah, that is the majority of what they think. And the other thing, too, is I would meet migrants that had an education, that were not somebody who didn't have much education. So we were told in the academy that they don't have, like, a fourth-grade education. They shouldn't be in this country. They're bringing nothing to this country and this and that. But when you do meet the migrants, there are plenty of migrants who are lawyers, who are doctors, who are nurses, and they're coming from countries that even the poor migrants are coming from. And I just found that the people that I was meeting were not what was represented to me in the academy, and it wasn't what the Border Patrol was saying publicly to the public.
Well, and one thing, too, that we don't discuss much is that the United States and fossil fuel interests and that sort of thing have ruined a lot of these countries to start with, and then they migrate here because there's not much of a life for them there. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7, 89.5, 89.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today is When Policing the Border, Cruelty is the Point. And Monterey Immigration Attorney Blanca Zarazua Esquire and I are speaking with Jen Budd, former U.S. Border Patrol agent and author of Against the Wall, My Journey from Border Patrol Agent to Immigrant Rights Activist. Learn more about Jen at jenbudd.com and learn more about Blanca at zaralaw.com. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Todd Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
Be Bold America show is edited into a podcast that's available for free on Apple, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms, including YouTube and on the KSQD website, and now on Pandora, too. So, Jen, you also selected the title of your book, Against the Wall. You used a lot of metaphors about a wall. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think when I was starting to try and understand how it is that I could go against my own core values and not see it, I think when I thought about my sexual assault in the academy, I thought of it as just putting up walls, which is essentially what we physically do on the border. We put up walls and we pretend that the problem of the migrants is going to go away. And it doesn't go away. And so what I had learned when I was a young girl going through abuse with my mother is I had this ability to do what psychiatrists call disassociate. Mm-hmm. And so while my mother was beating me, I could in my mind mentally be somewhere else. And so everything that happened to me and everything that I witnessed and saw on the Border Patrol, I would put behind a wall in my mind, and I would not think about it. And eventually what happened to me is it caught up to me, because those things don't go away, just like the problem on our southern border isn't going to go away. And, you know, walls need constant mending and fixing, just as the physical wall needs constant mending and fixing as well. And so it's this never-ending thing. Instead of addressing the problem, you're just constantly building a wall, trying to keep this quote-unquote problem out instead of dealing with it and addressing it and trying to figure out how to, you know, get to the other side and live and be healthy. So I think it just obviously made for a very easy metaphor to use that as well.
Good. Blanca?
Well, I just want to take a moment to congratulate you for your courage.
Yes.
I think immigrants demonstrate a lot of courage in undertaking mm-hmm. the journey and not knowing what's on the other side at the end of the journey. Maybe it's death, maybe it's asylum, maybe it's not. And I think you've had many, many challenges where courage has been the only way you've been able to overcome those challenges, mm-hmm. From the rape to having the courage to write this book. It's very intimate on many levels and yet very public. And so I want to congratulate you on that. And I think you're sharing that value with the immigrants who are trying to come across, which is courage. And if there's anything positive to take from this, is that courage has always been a value of American society. And so you're contributing to really encouraging us to continue to be courageous in whatever we do. And it may be something minor, it might be something major. And so I think that there's a commonality there between you and the immigrants in terms of the courage that you've been demonstrating.
And courage isn't the absence of fear. It is doing the right thing in spite of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're still, you're absolutely right. There's still a lot of fear, but
Yeah, that resonated with you. Jen, why?
Well, yeah, because I do go through moments of fear.
Yes.
I do get a lot of threats. I have been threatened by chiefs of the Border Patrol, and they reach out to me and threaten me quite a bit. And then I get a lot of threats from the sycophants who like to follow them and so forth.
They just sound like thugs to me. Just thugs.
Everything that I have brought forward has been true. It's not like they say, oh, what she's saying isn't true. They're just mad at me for saying it. For making it
right.
Public, and I just felt like, you know, I think I owe this to the United States, because they don't know what the Border Patrol is really about and what's really going on the inside of it. They don't know how they're misleading Americans right now, and I'm just not gonna sit back and take it anymore. This is insane what we're doing on the southern border.
Right. We have to step up, and we have to start talking and shining a light on this. And you brought up something about that Americans aren't aware of really what's going on. And I wanted to share something that fits right into that we never see. And this was just last night. Heather Cox Richardson writes a daily blog about what happened in history, what happened today. And she wrote what happened last night, and I wanted to share this. Last night, a woman and two children drowned in the Rio Grande, and I'm reading from her blog, that marks the border patrol between the U.S. and Mexico near Eagle Pass, Texas. U.S. Border Patrol agents knew that a group of six migrants were in distress in the river, but could not go and save them as they normally would, because troops from the Texas National Guard and the Texas Military Department prevented the Border Patrol agents from entering the area where the women and the children were struggling. Shelby Park, a 47-acre public park that offers access to a frequently traveled part of the river and is a place where Border Patrol agents often encounter migrants crossing the border. They could not enter because 2 days ago, on Thursday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott sent armed Texas National Guard soldiers and soldiers from the Texas Military Department to take control of Shelby Park. The mayor of Eagle Pass posted a video showing the troops and saying that the state official had told him that state troops were taking full control over Shelby Park indefinitely. The Texas forces denied the U.S. Border Patrol agents to enter into the park to perform their duties to save these women and children, and say that Texas officials now have power over the U.S. officials. Seems to me the first thing is the DOJ should be hauling a Texas governor in for murder. And the second thing is this seems like a statement of succession to me, that they say that the federal officers are now under the Texas rule. So hearing that story, what comes up for you, Jen?
Well, it's very, I will say the legal concepts of it are a little complicated. There is a Supreme Court decision in the late 1800s called Long versus Dorian Diaz in the United States that established that states did not have the authority to enforce immigration law, that it was actually for the federal government to enforce because of, they have, you know, obviously agreements with other nations. And this and that, and so it has to be done by the federal government. That's been decided since the late 1800s. And the other thing is that once a migrant is, depending on where the river is in any given season, but my understanding is in that area, once the migrants are halfway across the river, they are technically within the United States. And federal law, federal immigration law states that if you put a foot in the United States soil, then you are entitled to an immigration hearing if you so choose. And so he's violating all these laws. He's pitting soldiers against Border Patrol agents, and he really doesn't have any right to do this. And I agree that the Department of Justice should do something about this. However, I'm going to say, is he really doing anything different when the actual Border Patrol already does? So it's so funny to me, or so weird for me to see, you know, I'm seeing Democratic politicians rightly call him out for what he's doing, and this woman and these two children drown and this and that. But at the same time, migrants die every day, probably every hour, trying to cross that river just from the United States. And what we do as Border Patrol agents to push them out into that river and prevent them from crossing. So it's kind of ironic for the Department of Justice to point its finger at Greg Abbott, even though I think what he's doing is horrible. But they're doing the same thing. It's really kind of this dystopian picture that I'm looking at. I'm just confused by the whole thing.
Blanca? Bueno, estamos hablando acerca de las experiencias de los migrantes. Hace poco, dos niños se ahogaron tratando de cruzar a Estados Unidos. Y tuvieron al gobernador de Texas diciendo que no podían los federales tratar de rescatarlos, y estamos hablando sobre ese tema. I just think it's basic. You don't have to be a lawyer to know that federal law dominates over state law. And for the state officials to say, you know, the federal agents can't come in here, it's just ludicrous. And the problem
and
is
that... And to block them, to keep them from doing their job.
Right, but the problem is, meanwhile, back at the ranch, how many more drownings by the time it all hashes out and they clarify, you know, just like everything else that's going on in Washington and with all these trials, they're just slow. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, as I say, there's so much damage that's happening that needs to be addressed now, not through a process, but you need to respect the process. So that's the challenge.
Well, I think, isn't this kind of what we've seen during the last probably 8 years, and we saw definitely during the Trump administration, is where they do things that they know are going to violate the law. Greg Abbott knows he's violating the law. He knows it's going to go to court. But the fact of the matter is our courts, all of our institutions are failing us, and they know that they're going to get away with it. I mean, I agree. Governor Abbott is breaking law. He's doing something horrible. He needs to be held accountable. But I also look at what Joe Biden is doing and go, what he's doing is horrible. It's breaking the law. He needs to be held accountable. And so I see it, you know, people are like, it's so funny because when I talk, a lot of times Trump fans will say, oh, you just hate Trump and you love Biden. I'm like, no, have you ever heard me talk about Biden? Biden really hasn't done anything that he promised he was going to do.
Well, I understand that the first day of his presidency, he did submit a massive immigration plan to the Republican House, and they've done nothing on it. That's one thing he tried to do, but the House won't do anything. But this is a good time to take a break. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. At Many Voices, One Station, listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today is When Policing the Border, Cruelty is the Point. And Blanca Zarazua and I are speaking with Jen Budd, former U.S. Border Patrol agent turned immigrant rights activist. We will be right back after Jim Hightower's commentary titled, Mike Says That God Says He's Our New Moses.
Mike Johnson, bless his heart, says he doesn't, quote, want to get too spooky on you, but it was God who made him the new Speaker of the U.S. House. He's not asserting the fairly common belief held by many Christians that the Almighty plays a direct role in shaping people's lives. No, no. Mike's claim of divine selection is more singular, grandiose, and spooky. In a recent speech to a sect of Christian nationalists, he confided that just prior to being chosen speaker, God his own self had been awakening him every night for 3 weeks, quote, to speak to me about campaign strategy. Johnson says that while 13 other Republicans vied for the office, the Lord kept telling me to wait, wait, wait. Then God finally said, now step forward and claim the gavel of power. Why him, you might ask? Well, explains the ultra-right-winger, American culture has become so, quote, dark and depraved it almost seems irredeemable. So he says God needed a Christian purist to be a new Moses, willing to lead America from the wickedness of abortion, gay marriage, and what the religious nationalists call, quote, the ungodly effort to undermine our culture by leftists. Mike went further, explaining that, quote, God had been speaking to me about this, and the Lord told me very clearly to prepare and be ready. But, says Mike, he was told not merely to be ready to take the nation's third highest political office, but ready to guide the nation, Moses-like, through a Red Sea moment. So all of us should get ready, for we now have a Trump-supporting, holy rolling Congress critter who actually believes he's been chosen by God to part the perilous waters and take us from a diverse democracy to his theocratic Christian wonderland. This is Jim Hightower saying, God help us, and please hurry. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
If you are just joining us, our topic today is When Policing the Border, Cruelty is the Point. And I have Blanca Zarazua Esquire co-hosting with me, and our bold interview guest is Jen Budd, author of Against the Wall. Now, Jen, you know, also, I'd like to get your thoughts on, because we are dealing with Trump still, and we are dealing with his 2025 plans, where he talks about sweeping raids and giant camps and mass deportation as his immigration plans. What are your thoughts on what's happening now? I know you've left the Border Patrol years ago, but you must have thoughts about what Trump plans to do.
Well, it just keeps getting crueler and crueler, and I have no doubt that that's what he intends to do. The Border Patrol, through their Border Patrol union, they are with Trump 100%. They want this because the truth about the Border Patrol and its management and its union is they don't really care for legal immigration either. One of the things that they don't tell people is when they say there's a legal way to do it, we've actually been narrowing who can go and apply at the ports of entry. So actually, it's a small percentage of people that are allowed to do it the legal way. I have no doubt that on day one, if Trump wins, we will see absolute chaos in the streets, and we will see ICE and Border Patrol and CBP going after anybody who is a person of color, no doubt.
If we could just take a pause to look at what a historical betrayal that would be for this country that was built on immigrants. Are we changing our whole mission statement as a country? And why is that happening?
To a white nationalist country. That's right. That's what they're trying to change.
I think that history needs some due regard. I mean, this country is great, I would argue, because of the diversity, because of the immigrants, and the different views that are brought to the table. We see that in learning centers, universities, everywhere. The more people who chime in, the better solution that we get to. And so I have a really hard time understanding how people want to make it vanilla only when Baskin-Robbins has worked so well.
Jen, over to you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the problems that I see in our law enforcement is we allow law enforcement to hire their own people. And so unfortunately, we've seen a lot of white supremacy filter into our law enforcement agencies. We've seen them filter into our government. We've obviously seen it go into the White House with the last president. And, you know, he's open about it, and he doesn't fear that. One of the things I'd like to mention is that although we do have a lot of people right now crossing the border in between the ports of entry, that it is not everywhere down on the border. The videos that the public sees is just of one or two points in Arizona, maybe a point in San Diego, and maybe one area or two areas in Texas. The border is much bigger than that. And just because you see that there are some people crossing and waiting in line to cross at maybe 5 or 6 points along the border in the United States, it's not actually being overrun like they claim it is. But they want that visual. And so they are having them all cross in just these specific areas so that then the right-wing cameras can get videotape of lots of black and brown bodies coming across the border.
Right, and this doesn't so, that serve yeah. the political purposes too?
That's all propaganda.
Why solve it? Because it serves my purposes yeah. until the election to get everybody freaked out about millions
that's
of people.
That's exactly what it is. You should expect nothing but chaos on the southern border this entire year.
Well, that's they just want issues, not solutions. It's just issues.
Right.
Exactly. And if deterrence policies and walls worked, we wouldn't have record numbers crossing irregularly in between the ports of entry, and a lot of people call that illegally. We wouldn't have that today. We have been building walls since the mid-90s. And they didn't stop them back then. It's not going to stop them now. The fact of the matter is climate change and the fact that yes. we have gone into these countries and ruined their resources, taken their resources, overthrown their government, put in people we like and this and that. They are here because we were there in their countries first.
That's right.
So they are coming here.
Yep.
And if we want to do this without making people suffer, and let me tell you, Border Patrol agents suffer too because they're seeing this. I'm not saying they suffer more than migrants, but they do suffer. That's why we have a higher suicide rate than any other agency. But if we want to do this and not allow our country to be disrupted by a large amount of asylum seekers here, we actually have to build an asylum system that can handle that. And we don't spend any money on asylum. And processing. We just spend it on more walls, guns, and more agents.
And we need a functioning two-party system.
Yeah,
to do that.
The fact of the matter is when I was an agent in the mid-90s, for the amount of agents we had, for the amount of apprehensions we had, we would have to catch about 23 migrants a month for each agent. Today, that number is about 10 or 11. They have plenty of agents.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
They have plenty of agents. They are not overwhelmed. They are not telling the truth. They are not telling the complete truth. Yes, one station may be overwhelmed. Yes, one sector out of 9 sectors might have a lot of people. But Border Patrol agents can also be moved from area to area to handle those things. We need a legal avenue, one that is safe, one that is humane, where families can wait to have their inspections, where they can stay in clean areas and be fed properly and stay together and not be separated. And then when they pass their inspections, then they can help them go to their communities. This decision to detain everybody and put them in camp, it's just a choice. It's just a choice. You can either be cruel or you can set up an actual asylum system that inspects people, that helps maintain the security of the United States while also being kind and humane at the same time. It can be done.
Well, addressing that, I think there are so many systems that need to be fixed. And right now, I was just in immigration court a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. There are 3 million cases backlogged.
Oh, my.
So look at that. And then...
And that's San Francisco.
That's
the
nationwide.
Nationwide.
Federal. But... there is a great new, sounds promising system, CBP1. It's on your app. And so the migrant can sign up and get a work permit so that once he is able to come in, he's authorized to work. And that's serving somewhat as a deterrent where people know that they'll be able to come in without having to sneak in, if you will. They already have an ID number on their cell phone. They're going to have a work number, a work permit, but they have to wait in Mexico maybe 2 or 3 months. But it's a safer way to do things. And at least they're starting to be culturally adaptive to systems and processes. And it seems to be working pretty well because people have the assurance of having a work permit once they get in and they wait their whole process. Go ahead.
The thing that I learned from Title 42, which is the pandemic law that shut down the asylum system during the Trump administration, and from the migrant protection protocols, also known as Remain in Mexico, that kept people from being released and paroled into the United States to wait for their hearings. The thing that I learned from those two policies from the Trump administration that virtually shut down the asylum system for the vast majority of people was that if you shut down the asylum system, essentially all those families that want to cross legally and safely at a port of entry will turn around and cross irregularly in between the ports of entry. That's what we saw after Title 42 started. It took a couple months, but after a couple months, the crossings irregularly started to increase drastically. And the reason why asylum seekers were telling me is we know this guy's not going to, he's not going to let us in. If we have no chance to legally cross and be inspected, then yeah, we are going to cross irregularly because we are saying our lives are in danger. And so if you want the border to be in chaos, shut down the asylum system. It'll do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and the word gets out really fast.
The word gets out really fast. And that's, quite frankly, that's what the Border Patrol Union and the Republicans that they all support that are very anti-immigrant, that is what they want. They want the border to be overrun. And they'll sit there and say, well, how could you say that? Because I have the badge and I'm sworn in. Well, you're suggesting that we go back to Title 42. That is exactly what's going to happen. You shut down the asylum system, they're going to cross irregularly because they have no other place to go.
Well, there's certainly legal impediments to doing that. You can't just shut down asylum. I mean, there are laws in place that require you to keep it open at some level. And then, of course, it's also...
Well, you shut it down during Title 42, and they were processing, I think, at Saddam Cedar, like 10 or 15 people a day. You know, when the Ukrainians came through, they could process 1,000 Ukrainians a day at one port of entry.
Wow.
Maybe it was 1,000 a week, probably 1,000 a week that they were doing. They were doing a lot of Ukrainians really fast. When it comes to the other migrants who are of color from Africa, South America, or Central America, it's like, oh, no, I'm sorry.
Don't get me started, Jen. There's all this advanced parole for all of these countries, and there's Mexicans waiting how many centuries? I mean, there's advanced parole, yeah. Ukrainian, Haiti, Venezuela. And I'm sitting here, is there anything that starts with an M, please? It's just so unfair because the Mexicans see this and say, how come all of these people from all these faraway countries are getting into the U.S. and we don't have a viable option? And El Salvador, Nicaragua. I mean, there's new countries all the time. And it's so politically driven and it's so obvious. You just sit there going, oh, okay, somebody else wanted to have another sector come in. But it never includes the Mexicans. And that's just historical. And so it's cumulative. And so people are just very frustrated that there's no little TPS, nothing. You know, throw a bone to the Mexicans, please. Because as a population, they have been waiting for so long and working in this country and helping it.
Workers' programs, you're right. We need more of that. We've cut that way down and we don't have any of that going on really, as much as we used to. So that's good to know that CBP One app is starting to accept that.
Right. It sounds promising. I read about it recently. No dejen de escucharnos, aunque hablemos mucho inglés, también hablamos español. Entonces queremos que estén escuchando. Son temas importantes para nuestra comunidad.
And we're going to take a break. My co-host Blanca Zarzúa and I are speaking with our bold interview guest, Jen Budd, author of Against the Wall. Learn more about Jen at jenbudd.com. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7, 89.5, 89.7 FM. Many voices, one station. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
And we invite you to join us on Tuesday from 5 to 6 for KSQD's Talk of the Bay. And it's a very special program. Amy Chen Mills will welcome the Nobel Peace Prize nominee and author, Izzeldin Abu Laish. Dr. Abu Laish is a Palestinian-Canadian physician and internationally recognized human rights and peace activist devoted to advancing health and education for women and girls in the Middle East. He's author of the book, I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Dignity. Dr. Abu Laish's commitment is to forgiveness as the solution to conflict and the catalyst towards peace. A little background, he was born and raised in a refugee camp in Gaza and has overcome many personal hardships, including poverty, violence, and the horrific tragedy of his three daughters and niece's deaths in the 2009 Gaza War. He has already lost 22 extended family members in the current Israel-Hamas war.
Professor Abu Laish has been nominated 5 times for the Nobel Peace Prize and is fondly known as the Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi, or Martin Luther King of the Middle East, having dedicated his life to using health as a vehicle for peace. Special program this Tuesday from 5 to 6 here on KSQD's Talk of the Bay. And now back to Jill Cody.
Now, Jen, getting back to your book, what are a couple of the key messages that you want people know about from your book?
Well, I would say that if you try and run from your problems, that they will always catch up to you. It's one of the biggest lessons, not staying true to your core values is another lesson. And I think just blindly believing in American exceptionalism and not questioning things can really destroy your soul. And so I think those are the three topics that the book really hits on pretty hard.
Well, you remind me of one of my favorite Dr. Stephen Covey quotes, which is, "Unresolved feelings never die. They just come forth later in uglier ways."
That's true.
And this is, we're in a really ugly spot now at the border. Blanca?
Well, I just always am changing my point of reference, and so that keeps me positive. And I'm just so pleased that we're not hiding away in some bunker doing a secretive recording here, because this is democracy in action. The
That's
fact
right.
that we can talk about this, disagree with certain mm-hmm. things, and we take it for granted a lot, and people don't understand. In many countries, you know, we'd walk out the door and get shot. And so let's celebrate that. And the fact that we can discuss it to improve conditions for everyone. And thank you again, Jen, for your courage, because courage mm-hmm. is what gets us speaking about other topics that are scary. I mean, a lot of us are fearful to talk about other things. And I grew up as a very passive child, and then I got to law school, and now I'm the feistiest person in the room. And so I went through this whole change in psychology. But it works. I ask questions. I investigate. I research. And culturally, it can be taken the wrong way. Who does she think she is? And why is she snooping around? Well, because I'm analytical, and that's how we solve problems, and we get other people to share things that otherwise are not discussed. And I think that this is really a wonderful tribute to all of that. Jen, Against the Wall, is showing that if you're not okay with something, it's time to set forth why, put down your reasons why, and let everybody else think about it and say yes or no, or sometimes yes, sometimes no. And the mere fact that we're exchanging those ideas, to me, is just a cause for celebration.
Yes. Well, Jen, before we get into asking what we can do, you know, keep doing, stop doing, and start doing, I did want to mention something, because I don't think this country should ever forget it. And you can comment. If anybody wonders what evil looks like, what Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump did by ripping children from mothers' arms at the border is just that. And I don't want people to forget that that's what happened several years ago. And I still think 1,000 children have never been able to be reunited with their mother or father. And our country will always have that, like we have the Japanese internment camps as in our history. We will always have that, knowing that we did something as evil as that and supported by a president. Any thoughts with that rant, Jen, before we get into Keep, Stop, Starts?
Well, I agree with you on that, and I would also argue that I hope one day Americans understand that our deterrence policies are intentionally killing men, women, and children and babies who are seeking safety, and I hope we recognize that as the atrocity that it is. The United States Border Patrol says it's around 10,000 since 1994. I'm going to say that's a lie. It's probably, it's at least 10 times more than that.
Wow.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, it's astonishing how many have died down here just because we push them out to those areas and force them to cross that way.
Well, the Public Religion Research Institute has done a couple of studies on Americans' views on on immigration. And one of them, in their second report, they looked at the increasing partisan divide when it comes to immigration policies. But the majority of Americans oppose installing deterrence issues. Just these tactics were supported by two-thirds of Republicans and three-quarters of white evangelicals. But basically, the American public does not want these deterrence issues happening at the border. So again, it's a minority of people doing the majority of the damage and destruction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, Jen, that you talk about how people are sort of herded into high-risk areas. I mean, this is like topographical warfare or geographic warfare. Like, this is how we can get rid of them. Let's just throw them to the east. Well, they either die from heat or die from cold. And
well, it seems like it's warfare because deterrence policies came from the Department of Defense.
Ah, there you go.
That's why.
It is warfare.
They helped design them for the Border Patrol.
Wow. Well, that just confirms my suspitions.
Yeah,
and the fact that it would be couched in terms of defense, like somebody's attacking us and we have to defend ourselves by herding them to the east.
Right. Women and children, babies.
That's the difference between like pre-9/11 and post-9/11 agents. I'm a pre-9/11 agent, and we didn't view asylum seekers and migrants as invaders like they say they are now. So a lot of that terminology didn't even exist when I was an agent. They've been progressively making, if it's even possible, I didn't think it was possible, but it is, making the agents even more prejudiced and xenophobic and racist by calling the asylum seekers invaders and that they're trying to take over our country. And the union president, Brandon Judd, he talks to the agents about replacement theory.
Wow.
Well, in these last few minutes, Jen, I'd like to ask what ideas you might have for us to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing regarding supporting your efforts and reshaping immigration policies. Our future depends on it.
Yeah, I think we should keep, you know, trying to stay informed. I know how that can be hard. There's some days and maybe even weeks where you just want to unplug, and maybe you need to do that for, you know, mental health. But trying to stay informed, we need to make sure we get out and vote, and we need to keep calling our congressional members, even though it feels like that's not doing any good. We need to keep doing that. We need to stop doing is we need to stop listening to propaganda put out by CBP and the U.S. Border Patrol and right-wing media on immigration. It is solely to the very far right. We need to start seeking out more independent minds on immigration and start following, learning about the groups down here on the southern border that do a lot of work, like El Otro Lado, Southern Border Communities Coalition. There's a whole bunch of different groups. Then I think for start doing, we need to start getting involved locally with the immigrants and the migrants that live in our communities, and to learn how to help them. People a lot of times say, well, I'm in the middle of Iowa, what can I do? And I'm like, well, I'm sure wherever you're living, you have some immigrants and some migrants around you. And one of the things that you can do is get to know them, get to know who they are, you know, and sit down and break bread with those people so that you're not so inclined to believe these propaganda tales that are coming out of the media and the Border Patrol and CBP.
Blanca, do you have some ideas that we should keep doing, stop doing, and start doing?
Keep hiring the immigrants to clean your homes and take care of your children as you, you know, spew all this stuff about how terrible they are. I mean, the hypocrisy is too much. I'm sure a lot of these high-visibility politicians are using the workforce that they criticize so strongly because everybody needs a good landscaper. Everybody needs people who are really dedicated to working and conscientious. And staffing is a big issue in America today. Well, you're looking at the wrong subsector. There's a whole immigrant population that is ready to work and be there on time and show up early and work another hour, extra hour, instead of some of the U.S.-born I won't say kids, but younger folks who sometimes are just distracted and just want to get paid and maybe aren't that into the job. There's a whole sector that is. And so I think we have to start looking at people who can contribute to the economy as they have done historically and continue to promote them as really good, honest people who can work fully. I mean, I can't tell you the trauma that people go through. I have legal residents who think that they can't travel outside the U.S. because they're not U.S. citizens, even though they have a green card. And just when
they're afraid they won't get back in.
Right. Or even when I'm terrified, all of us attorneys, immigration attorneys, were traumatized when the former president, not the current president, was in office, because every day we'd get insidious, traumatic experiences where government attorneys wouldn't talk to us, where immigrants were self-deporting. For dignity. If they're going to kick me out, I'm just going to leave. And all of this, I mean, just what Jen painted for us, this massive chaos, I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting until after November, and not that it's going to be over by then, but I just want some indication that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, that we'll get through this.
Yeah.
Jen, I want to thank you for being our bold and impressive guest today. Thank you for sharing some of your difficult stories, and thank you for an hour of your valuable time to be on Be Bold America. We really appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you, and I appreciate you being willing to talk about this subject and be open to it. I appreciate it.
It's a major issue in our area, so we're very happy to have you here. And to learn more about Jen, visit jenbud.com. I also want to give a big thank you to my bold co-host, Monterey County Immigration Attorney Blanca Zarzua, for co-hosting with me today. You may contact Blanca at zaralaw.com. Thank you, Blanca.
Thank you. It's been my honor. Muchísimas gracias. No de sintonizar en el futuro.
Thank you. What's up next, Be Bold America? Please join us on Sunday, January 28th, 2024, for The Climate Crisis Hits Monterey County. As climate change and atmospheric bring flooding, windstorms, and power outages to the Central Coast, Monterey County must prepare for an ongoing shift in its communities. This includes being faced with significant social and economic impacts, including disadvantaged populations. Be Bold America has the honor of interviewing not one, but two Monterey County Board of Supervisors, Mary Adams and Glenn Church, who are intimately aware of Monterey County's challenges and potential solutions, from the Pajaro flooding to the erosions of its beautiful coastline. So please join Be Bold America on January 28th at 5 p.m. to hear The Climate Crisis Hits Monterey County. As a reminder, Be Bold America is available as a podcast for free on Apple, Spotify, and now on Pandora, as well as YouTube and the KSQD website. You may subscribe for free. I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer today, who is also our station program director, Howard Felstein. And again, a bold thank you to my fabulous co-host and Monterey immigration attorney, Blanca Zarzua. You are listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQT Broomdale, Many Voices, One Station. Listen worldwide online at KSQD.org. Stay tuned for Intersections with Seth Shapiro. My name is Jill Cody, and thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.